For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
On Tuesday's program, we were, it kind of organically had a conversation turn into what's going on with St. Louis Police Department, obviously with recruiting and retention and pensions. Came up as well, because that's one of the things that police departments offer their officers. And I mentioned, you know, how pensions in general just really are designed for an economy of generations ago. And, you know, I'd like to see, you know, employees, whether it's public sector or private sector, be able to own their own retirement. But it kind of drifted into a law enforcement focus on that. And then I heard from Gary Wiegert, who used to be the president of the St. Louis Police Officers Association. And Gary, good to chat with you. I appreciate you. First of all, appreciate you listening to Newstalk STL, but also reaching out on this, because I've run into Gary at conservative things around town every once in a while. And when it comes to the pension, you've been up and down and all around with the pension, having been on the pension board, having gone through a fight with them. You know, obviously they eventually removed you after you were sending information to the attorney general about what was happening. So when you look at the pension situation right now, that's a big thing that they offer to police officers. And you were telling me on the phone yesterday that it may not be in as solid a footing as what a lot of people are being told right now, if I understood you right.
No, and hey, thanks for having me on. My pension right now, it's a dumpster fire. We lost $100 million in 1 year.
Wow.
And that's because our investments are so risky. It's a roller coaster ride. And I think as the city has less and less money to contribute, they're taking more and more risk. So we're investing heavily in emerging markets, which is basically China, very risky right now. And a lot of the companies we're investing in is at the discretion of the city. And so, like, we invested in, like, the Gompers Fund, and that's all this Green New Deal. It had terrible returns. But this is what the city wants the money invested in. So, yeah, my pensions, it's got a lot of problems. If you want, I'll outline some of the problems for you.
Well, just one real quick clarification, though. We're talking, this is the pension for the St. Louis City police officers, correct?
Yes, only okay. The retirees and actives. And we have about 1,530 retirees, and we have about 420 some odd widows who are on the pension plan also.
Yeah, and the other thing is that what's unique about pensions is unless they've changed it, since my understanding of it, because I haven't done a pension related story in a long time, is that if you bankrupt your pension, taxpayers are basically on the hook to keep paying.
Yes. So when we have shortfalls, you know, Mayor Slay stopped contributing to the pension a number of years ago. The pension board sued, and by court order, they have to keep it, I believe, 78% funded. And so last year, the city contributed $37 million into our pension. The 2 years prior, it was $33 million. But with the bad investments that have gone on, the city's contributions going up, and it's going to go up and up. I mean, there's going to be no stopping this. It's going to keep climbing. And at some point, you know, the city's got their revenues are dropping. They're not going to be able to afford this.
Good morning, Gary. Gabe Pfeiffer here. The city's already got a challenge in trying to retain officers and recruit officers to police community. How does the pension, you think, play into that whole discussion?
Well, I think the pension is the only thing that's keeping people there as they try to stay there to get their maximum benefits. You know, a number of years ago, this was about 6 or 7, I'll tell you what, 7 years ago, Dean Plocker, the Speaker of the House, had sponsored a bill to try and change benefits for new hires. And I think that was, I testified in support of that. And of course, then I got attacked by the union and Jane Duker and Jeff Warda. They wanted new hires to keep the same benefits, but it's just not sustainable. It can't happen. And so, you know, when my pension plan was enacted, your life expectancy was 66 years old. Now it's 78. And they just cannot afford this anymore. And so these are the problems our pension is having. We have $5 million a year is paid out to disability officers with disabilities. So that's 15% of our payouts go to disabled officers. And I think what's happening is the work environment gets worse and worse. officers were putting in for disabilities that I thought many were basically phony. And it's like an ongoing problem now. It's like we're digging ourselves deeper in a hole and we can't get out.
Good morning, Gary. This is Ken Williams. Considering the health of the pension in the city with the police officers, I want to see if you could suggest yay or nay on this. If a police officer is considering leaving after being in for 5 years, but he's being on the fence because of the pension, would you maybe suggest that, yeah, go ahead, it'd be okay to go at this point?
I would never suggest anyone leave my police department. I was there 35 years. I love that place, even though I think it's being poorly managed right now. So I would never suggest anybody leave. But I think they have to do certain things. I think the number one thing is pay. And I think one of the other things is stability. I mean, these young officers do not believe that pension is going to be there. Matter of fact, when you talk to them, I think that's why a lot of them leave, because they know this isn't going to happen. I mean, the 20-year disability benefit was a great benefit for a lot of policemen, but it's just not sustainable right now. And the public doesn't like these 20-year pensions, because a lot of these guys take a pension at 20 and then they go get another job with the city or somewhere else, and then they get another pension. And I think these multiple pensions is another problem.
There are four finalists to become the next police chief. Gary, I mean, obviously, they'll be involved with this sort of thing. I mean, the mayor and the board of aldermen are out there as well. But what advice would you have for whoever is picked to be the next police chief? And what do you hope the city looks for in the police chief? And I don't know much about any of the four candidates, just the very basics. But what should the city want? And what advice do you have for that person, whoever it is that gets hired?
I would like to see a police chief who actually supports his men and wants pay raises for his men. He wants benefits for his men, and he wants to allow them to go out and really do their job. I'm afraid that police work is actually going the opposite way. I mean, we used to go out and basically hunt criminals, and now I think police work is going to be static, where you station a policeman at this location so a crime doesn't happen. We can't chase cars anymore. We really can't chase. You know, they even put out a thing, even when I was on the department, where they try to discourage you from being involved in foot pursuits. And I know some police departments have said no more foot pursuits because people are getting injured. So I don't know what the answer is to all this with who's going to be the police chief, but I think whoever they pick as their police chief, it's going to be a heap of problems. And what happens is these chiefs come in with these new ideas, and they last for 3 or 4 years, and then they move on and they bring another guy in. And now I see we're going out of the area, and we're going to bring someone else in. Well, you're just bringing in failures from other police departments to come in and try and solve your problems, and they'll do it for a couple of years, and then they'll move on.
Gary, really quick, state versus local control of city police. What are your thoughts?
So I was when I was president of the Police Officers Association, I always fought state control. But the problem is they came in, it went to a statewide vote. They promised the union a collective bargaining agreement, which was a terrible agreement. And then they promised the pension people that the state would still be able to administrate it. I thought it was a bad idea because, you know, once we had a Janus ruling, the FOP could no longer force the black officers and the supervisors to join the organization. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Janus ruling, what the mm-hmm. Supreme Court did on that. Mm-hmm. But public employees cannot be forced to pay into the union anymore. So that whole collective bargaining agreement was a bad deal from the get-go. I'm for state control. You know, Kansas City went back to local control, and then it went right back to the state during the Prendergast years. I think we're going to have the same problem here. I'd like to see the state controlling us. I think one of the big problems with local control was that these lawsuits, when these people sue the city police department, there's no cap on it. So it's unlimited pay. It used to be when the state had control, they had a cap, I think, of $600,000 on a lawsuit. So I believe the state is probably the only thing that could probably save this police department.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of local Democratic state representatives really angry about the proposals. I don't know how much appetite Governor Parson has for that, but it's going to be really interesting. Multiple bills say that some Republicans in the legislature are serious about putting the state control back on, because look what's happening in St. Louis, Gary. They're claiming, and we're a little bit over time here, but you know, they're claiming that look, crime is down, it's working, we don't need to keep funding police to these same levels. But you ask anybody in St. Louis, we work in downtown area. We know what people are saying around here.
I think if you ask the citizens, they want more police. But unfortunately, the Democratic Party has changed. We have all these woke Democrats. They are very anti-police, and they will do whatever they can to defund the police. I mean, they're open about it. They say they want to defund the police department, and they are. And I think that will probably help destroy us.
And then wonder why the police officers want to leave. Yeah. All right, Gary Wiegert, former president of St. Louis Police Officers Association, former, you were a sergeant, I think, in the police department, right, in St. Louis?
Yeah, I retired as a sergeant.
Sergeant. Okay. Hey, Gary, appreciate you being on the program, and obviously for listening. We appreciate everybody listening.
Thanks, Gary.
All right. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks,
right,
Gary.
You got it. Gary Wiegert there, former St. Louis City Police Sergeant. And former union president there as well. Mm-hmm. All right, 314-912-1019. Just ahead, weird headlines. The Trump Organization, not Donald Trump, the Trump Organization convicted of a bunch of tax fraud charges. Okay, what's that actually mean? And is it what they're trying to say? Well, I'll get the update that we'll clarify as much as we can on some of this stuff. It's happening in New York State, so, you know, there you go. 721 right here on 101.9 941 Newstalk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.
Amy, what's some free stuff?
Sure.
I like free stuff. Not you too.
Oh, jeez, man.
NewstalkSTL.com. You can register to be part of our conservative Christmas giveaway. And we've been doing that all week. We're going to keep doing it through next week, too, I think. Right around 8:20, so 1 hour from right now, we're going to announce the latest conservative Christmas giveaway winner right here on Newstalk STL. And really, that's all it is. Just put your name in the hat. We just do that through the website. Put your name in the hat. We draw names, and then we announce that you won, and then we get in touch with you and say, where do you want us to send your stuff? And that's really it. That's what we do.
Yeah, so you don't have to call like when we ask you to. Just sign up, and you can still sign up, too.
And yeah, you can still sign up and you can still call us too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to.
Yeah, we want to talk to you.
Just if you want to. Yeah, but you don't have to do that in order to win. All right, 7:24 right now. I'm Mike Ferguson, got Gabe Pfeiffer there and Ken Williams there. A lot of headlines that I think are confusing to those of us who are not lawyers. I actually texted Susie Moore this morning, and I'm doing prep on the show knowing that she's nowhere near awake yet. I'm like, okay, this is what she's going to wake up to is a text from me. Mm-hmm. But the headlines are the Trump Organization convicted of multiple tax fraud charges.
Right.
And I thought, wait a minute, the organization, the company, not an individual, but the company. So I texted Susie. I said, does this make sense? Is this like a civil lawsuit? And they keep saying convicted of tax crimes. I said, or is this criminal? Well, it actually was a criminal case brought against the Trump Organization. That's the name of the entity, is the Trump Organization. So to try to clarify it a little bit here, as we've got Fox News' Grinnell Scott kind of explaining what happened.
Trump Organization attorneys and the former president himself in a statement both say the company committed no crime. They say it was about Alan Weisselberg and the Trump CFO's personal fraud. They will appeal. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg said the case at its core was simple.
This was a case about lying and cheating, false documents to the end of evading taxes for the benefit of individuals and the corporations.
Organization lawyers continue to say the former president and his family knew nothing of Weisselberg's actions. Grinnell Scott, Fox News.
Okay, so Susie replied back, and she let me know that no, you actually can charge a company with criminal offenses.
Sure.
And so, given these convictions, there could be about $1.6 million in fines. Is that something that could be, assuming the appeal doesn't work? Here's the thing, is that it's important to note that Donald Trump
personally was not a criminal defendant here. This was against the company itself. Donald Trump calls it a witch hunt, among some other things. $1.6 million for the Trump Organization is not much.
No, not at all. Well, and my question is it actually, did the company actually evade that much in taxes, or was it the personal taxes of the individual? And I think that's what's that question, right?
And that's the thing. I mean, that's kind of the way I understand is that the fine could be up to this, because that's what they're saying is, you know, was cost the government.
I guess.
I don't know.
It's really in the weeds, because the thing is, tax laws are really weird and complicated. So, I don't think anybody outside of the courtroom is qualified to make a determination as to whether or not this was a good or bad decision.
Yeah, I mean, they are criminal convictions. There's like 15 charges that a guilty verdict came back on. So, how about this? Does this affect any of the dynamics of the presidential race?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't think anybody who's a Trump fan or at least Trump adjacent, I guess, in their politics is going to regard this as a disqualifier. And everybody who is jumping for joy at the conviction right now, they were never going to vote for Trump to begin with.
I agree 100%. So how about this question then? Because Donald Trump says that the company is going to appeal.
Sure.
Which they've got a right to do. Yeah. I don't know if that's wise. Here's why I say that.
Okay.
I say that because all it does is make it that much easier to keep the words conviction and tax fraud in the headlines when this is so confusing and so many people don't understand that it was against a business entity versus an individual. So
who happens to share the same name.
He owns it.
He puts his name on everything. So
I don't know that from a campaign perspective that it's worth it to appeal versus, you know, just pay the stinking fine and then, you know, say that it was politically motivated and do it that way. I don't know if it makes any sense politically to appeal.
This is why people paid you for your political advice, because that's actually really, really good advice. Because the idea is like, okay, well, would you rather, pay the fine and just be done with it, and so it goes away out of the news, or continue to pay legal fees and have it constantly be in your face in the news while you're trying to run a political campaign? So I think you're right in this case. I mean, these situations, especially political situations, are rarely ones in which you're looking at what's the right thing? I mean, not to say that it's wrong necessarily, but just, you know, what is the most just thing? It's like, well, we're not guilty of this thing and we're going to fight it. Maybe the right thing in your mind, but politically is not the right thing because you're going to be hurting your cause. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I got into the conversation later. I was talking to Jermaine McNabb and just saying hi.
Hello.
She called.
Yeah.
And, hi. Yeah, she likes the show. So
great. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. I mean, so the prosecutors in the case say that this was basically executive decisions all the way up the board, and everybody, you know, knew about it and they were signing off on it. And that's, you know, I wasn't in the courtroom. You know, I don't know. I think it's weird that tax fraud cases are criminally charged against a company.
That is weird to me.
I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but, you know, it's hard to think that politics were not involved, but if there's tax fraud, there's tax fraud. But, you know,
it may be a matter of standing in that the government does the government charge people civilly,
or it can sue you.
Okay, yeah. I'm just wondering if it's just a matter of, well, the government's bringing the suit, so it falls into the criminal courts kind of automatically.
Civil suit and a criminal, those are going to be two different things.
Well, to be tied, certainly.
A civil thing is like you were trying to just get back we're trying to get back whatever it was that was taken, or you're doing something we want you to be ordered to stop. In this case, they're saying laws were broken. We are charging an entire entity, which that's what I was confused.
Oh, that's
why I appreciate Susie sending me these notes and like, no, you can charge a business or a corporation with crimes as opposed to an individual, because the guy, the CFO that was there, you know, apparently he had a bunch of weird stuff with his personal taxes too.
Yeah.
Well, as unusual as it might be, I mean, If it has to do with Trump in New York, I would not put it past anything.
See, and that's why I say I don't think this affects anything in 2024.
Yeah.
No. The people who like Trump, you know, are going to, you know, dismiss this. And the people who hate Trump were hated him to start with.
And they're going to find something else. It's not, you know.
It was a jury of Manhattanites who did this.
Right. Right.
I mean, and it was a Manhattanite who decided to make the charges. So, meh. It is what it is.
Here's the thing is if they really think Donald Trump engaged in tax fraud, they would charge Donald Trump.
Yes. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
now the headlines will say John Trump.
Yeah. I mean, it says Trump Organization.
Right.
Which is the
technically
name.
Technically is correct.
Of the organization.
Right. Right.
But, yeah, you're getting it on you.
Yeah, precisely. All right, 314-912-1019. Speaking of convictions, ooh, boy, some St. Louis City former politicians getting the book thrown at them by a judge. I'm actually surprised about this. I'll tell you what the sentences were for three of the former politicians now completely disgraced, and what's going to happen. They go into jail, folks. I mean, like, for real. I'll tell you about it at 735 at 1019-941 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
At 7:50, I know it's you know, it's not what a radio consultant would tell me to do, but I think it's a good time today to pause and actually remember Pearl Harbor. And I say remember, obviously I wasn't there 81 years ago.
Right.
But collectively we are forgetting because it's just getting to be longer and longer and longer and more generations away. So what some people read about in history books was something that historically was not that long ago. So I'm going to try to connect us with that at 7:50. And so if you got some veterans in your life or other people who are just passionate about that, send them a quick text. Let them know that we're doing this on News Talk STL. You can also find it on, you know, we're on Rumble and Facebook and YouTube and everywhere else. So I'm Mike Ferguson. It's 7:38 at the moment. Gabe Pfeiffer's here. Ken Williams is here. Sentences handed down yesterday for three former politicians in St. Louis City. I was not expecting what that judge did.
Not at all.
Let's put it that way.
Pleasantly surprised, we'll say.
Really pleasantly surprised. So, former president of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed, former alderman, John Collins Muhammad, and Jeffrey Boyd were all caught in a sting operation by the feds. They were all caught, as you know, taking bribes, you know, to abuse their office and hand out goodies and make sure things got done. And it just cost cost some money here and there. But what happened with, I don't know why that wire's doing that, we expected that there would be some kind of negotiation. They pled guilty to all the charges, and I thought there would be some kind of reduced sentence because you got them, put them in jail, you're going to hurt their career, you're going to hurt their money-making ability, you're going to send the message. I did not expect for Lewis Reed and John Collins Muhammad each to be sentenced to 45 months in prison.
That's amazing. I was not expecting.
No.
Like, that's huge.
45 months.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
That's what that is.
Lewis Reed's also ordered to pay back $18,500, the money he took in bribes.
Mm-hmm.
John Collins Muhammad ordered to pay back $19,500. Jeffrey Boyd was sentenced to 36 months in prison. He's got to pay back $23,000. And as far as I don't know when their sentences start, when they're going to actually go behind bars, but they're actually going behind bars for a long time. Now, are they going to serve the full 45 months or 36 months? No. No, they're not going to do that.
There's no way that
happens. You get credit for, like, good behavior, and a prison year isn't necessarily the same as a calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys are going to be in for, you know, they're going to be in for a couple or a few years.
Good behavior, they're in there for bad behavior.
Right. That's the irony of it all. That's the irony of it all.
Yeah.
But here's what surprised me about that is even though they were caught red-handed, and as indignant, rightfully, as we get when it comes to public corruption, you were chosen by the people of your community to oversee government, to oversee money, to protect people's rights, to try to help your community. And not only did you profit off of it, but you made helping people in your community contingent upon putting money in your pocket. That's what's so angering about this kind of corruption. Given all of that, the reason I was so surprised is we still often have a mindset that, you know what? They were in this office. They were, you know, they're kind of a political elite. We kind of take it easy on them. Whereas you wouldn't do that if somebody was caught you know, doing something just as bad, embezzling from a nonprofit or embezzling from a church or something like that. But because they were elected officials, we tend to take it easy on them. And I say we, I mean just like society. I'm glad to see that the books are kind of thrown at them.
Yeah, I just always wonder why. Why do we have leniency on our politicians when they're the ones where we actually should be holding to a higher bar, you know?
That's a fair question.
That's exactly where my mind was going, because we do exactly the opposite, I think, what we should do, where we give people credit for quote-unquote serving mm-hmm. when they wield so much power in those positions, as opposed to we hold them more accountable because of how much power they wield in those positions. It's like, no, but they were doing a good job up until this thing. It's like, you know what? That's the problem. They were basically hiding until they could do something really nefarious with their power. And we need to squash that bullcrap immediately and with prejudice.
But he was trying to give you CPR after he ran you over with a car, so give him some credit.
Right.
You get none credit.
I just hope it has a chilling effect to any other politicians who are thinking that they might be able to get away with something they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because think about it this way. Does it work that way in any other, you know, area in life? Like if you cheated on only one question on a 100 question test, your teacher would like, no, your whole test is a zero. You don't get credit for the 99 other questions that you answered.
That's the way it was in my school.
Right? You know what I mean? So it's like, well, but, you know,
let me qualify.
I learned one time that's the case.
let me qualify a little bit with that. If you had something that was like a lapse in judgment or an accidental thing or something like that. So let's go like to, you know, some case in a nonprofit or even in a government setting, in a political setting.
You put the number in the wrong place.
Number in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I didn't realize that it was, I mean, there are areas where, you know, in 10 minutes, this was cold-blooded corruption.
Yes.
That's the difference here.
Yes.
I mean, this was cold-blooded, blatant, explicit, pay-to-play. You are going to pay me to do what government should be doing because I can hold it up if I want. And if you pay me, then I'm going to go ahead and make sure it happens.
Well, didn't Reed trip and fall into that bag of money?
Yeah, that's right. He was on his way from church to the orphanage.
And
he tripped. And he tripped into a bag of money. He was like, oh, what's this doing here? And some guy came out and was like, take the money and give me what I want. And it's like, oh, no, I had no choice. No, that's not how it works. And you went out and sought the most nefarious way possible to make your extra 20K or whatever the heck it was.
Was it worth it?
And yeah, exactly. The real question is, was it worth it?
Hopefully it's not worth it. Now, the thing is that sometimes what will happen is they'll come out and they'll get put on boards or they'll be taken care of, you know, in the political community somehow, probably, but nowhere near what they could have been otherwise. When it comes to this sort of thing, does it send a message? Let's hope.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me put it. It does send a message. Will that message be heard in City Hall after, you know, decades of a culture of corruption, and not just in St. Louis? I mean, the wink and the nod, we know how things work around here. You just got to do it. That happens everywhere, not just across the country, but across the world, because we are inherently corrupt as humanity. There are people who get into running for office and public service for the right reasons, and tragically, there are people, Republican and Democrat alike, who just get corrupted along the process. Sometimes it's a crime of opportunity. Sometimes it's peer pressure. Hey, man, this is just how it works. You're going to do this anyway. You might as well get something, you know, for yourself along the way. Or there's other people who just see that it can be done and they just change their mind because they start to feel the godlike power that too many public officials think that they have.
And what do you think about the possibility, Mike, of them, flipping on somebody else, so that's why they get in these sentences really quick, hopes that they think about it, and maybe jump on someone else and say that they were involved.
Well, it was interesting because in the sort of press availability post sentencing, the federal prosecutors were asked, "Does this close the case?" They would not say. They didn't say yes.
That's
they didn't say no.
That means something.
Yeah,
I think it. My experience of many, many years in this business, much of it spent back in the days I used to be a journalist. That's how I would read it. I can put it that way. That's exactly how it would be. Because you know what? The federal prosecutor can always send a letter at a parole hearing if they cooperated in these other cases.
Yeah.
So it's been done before.
I love it.
81 years ago, a tragedy struck when Pearl Harbor was bombed, and there aren't a whole lot of folks still around who were there or remember it, but we are going to pay tribute to it just ahead right here on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Okay, so 805... We're having a conversation about, development and tax increment financing, but don't think that this is going to be one of those things where your eyes glaze over and it's just a bunch of numbers. It's not. Going to be an unusual conversation because conservative talk station like News Talk STL, we've got the president of the St. Louis County NAACP going to be on the show, John Bowman, because I think that their objection to what's happening at Crestwood right now is actually right. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, Gabe, that we're not going to agree with the NAACP on politically.
Absolutely.
I think they've got a real big point on this one. Crestwood even is swinging back at the NAACP.
Really?
Over this. Yeah, it's really interesting. So yes, it is about, money and taxes and corporate welfare and all that sort of thing, but it's about more than that. I mean, you've got the NAACP and the Show Me Institute both looking at this kind of the same way.
Yes.
In a way. I mean, there's some areas where the NAACP has additional things they're upset about.
They're coming at it from a little
different
places.
They're coming at it from different perspectives, but they're both saying this is really not a good deal for taxpayers on it. So we're gonna talk about that at 8:05. 7:52 right now. I'm Mike Ferguson with Gabe Pfeiffer and Ken Williams. 81 years ago today, the Japanese military bombed Pearl Harbor, sunk many of our ships. 3,500 American lives were taken. Whew. 81 years ago today. Obviously, this is, as we all know, what brought us into World War II. You want to hear a little interesting tidbit of history? The United States Navy, by the end of World War II, had identified every single ship that the Japanese military used in the attack on Pearl Harbor, aircraft carriers and others, sunk every one of them by the end of the war. They not only fought to win the war, but they hunted those who attacked the United States.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that. But I wanted to mention this, one, because we're getting worse and worse in this country about remembering these moments in history collectively, because it is so long ago. I mean, to somebody in high school right now who's 15 years old, this is ancient history to them.
Yeah. They don't even remember 9/11.
No, they don't remember. Right? No, I mean, they look at it the same way that you would look at, Thomas Jefferson, writing the Declaration of Independence, or George Washington commanding the military at, wherever. I mean,
Gettysburg Address.
That's how they look at that. This is what's in their history book. And while we do have video of this, we do have pictures of this, I think for so many people, what we have is relegating this to the pages of a history book.
Yeah.
As opposed to connecting with this. So the following day, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave an address to the nation, and I think it's timely today and a good way to remember.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always,
will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God.
Why is it important to stay connected to those moments in history long before we were ever born?
I think it gives context to the world that we live in right now. It tells us, I mean, knowing where you come from gives information about where you are, and it should help inform about where you ought to go in the future. So our past is very, very important, and I really, really wish there would be a better emphasis on learning true history, on understanding true history in this country, because right now it feels as though our kids are lost in their identity about who and what we are as a nation right now, and their visions for the future are shaped by complete misinformation, fraud, and utopianism. And it would all look very, very different if we had an understanding about where we came from. And Pearl Harbor is one of those defining moments in American history in particular, and I would say world history.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for today. And it's shaped a lot of what you see.
And I think a lot of the things that we've done well in World War II, and then it gives us pride, and that pride is what I think sustains us as patriots in this country.
Mm-hmm. The United States Army assembled that audio to give credit where credit is due, but I saw that and I'm thinking we've just got to put that on there because we cannot collectively forget, even those of us who weren't there to remember. All right, back to local, state, national news and your opinions on all of it and what's happening just ahead. We'll start that around 8:04 on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.